More importantly, he had an attunement mark that I'd never seen. I'd been seeing attunements since my childhood, but I'd never seen one that looked like that. It was a foreign mark, one from one of the other towers. I knew that dozens of other attunements existed, of course, and I'd even seen a few during large social events and the occasional sporting event, but this one stood out in another way, too. Now that I knew about attunement levels, I had a pretty good idea of how common each of them were. Most adults seemed to be carnelian level. That seemed to be where most soldiers, teachers, and other professionals stopped. This guy was at least a sunstone mage, which put him in a similar category to Teft or Meltlake. Pretty impressive for someone of his age. So when I nearly blundered into this guy, I admit that I froze up for a moment. He probably could have taken my head off with a flick of his hand. He just laughed, taking a step back and folding his hands.
"Sorry about that. Didn't mean to nearly clobber you there."
He extended a gloved hand. I managed to shake off my stupor long enough to give him a hand clasp. He narrowed his eyes for a moment as we shook.
"You look familiar somehow."
I tried not to look too intimidated by that. "Corn Cadence," I managed.
"Oh!"
He released his grip, grinning and stepping back.
"I thought I knew you! Tristan and I went to school together!"
I must have winced at the sound of my brother's name, because the stranger's expression sank.
"Ah, I'm so sorry. I just remembered. I'm so sorry for your loss."
I shook my head. "No, it's fine. It's been years now. Thanks for being so considerate." I managed to peel my eyes away from his mark to glance his face over a little more carefully, but he still didn't look familiar. "I'm sorry. I fear I can't remember your name." He shook his head.
"Don't worry. You were probably still a child last time I visited. I'm Derek Hardigan."
"Pleasure to meet you again, Derek."
"Likewise."
He glanced downward, frowning at something.
"That sword you're carrying, is that for sale?"
I was a bit taken aback by the question. I hadn't considered it, but probably not. It has a degree of sentimental value.
"Oh, of course, not a problem. I'm just something of a collector of rare weapons."
Had he recognized my weapon at a glance? I didn't realize it was that famous. But maybe he had another attunement that was helping him identify it. Or maybe he just had a strong mana sense. I didn't know much about foreign attunements, and I wasn't sure if he had one that was of an information-gathering style. I'd need to research that. "Sorry to disappoint you. I'll let you know if I'm ever looking to sell it, though, or if I come across any others." He looked pleased at that.
"Excellent! Well, I've a survival match to win later today, so I must be off. You're welcome to come watch if..."
He cut himself off.
"Ah, but you're still a student, aren't you?"
I glanced down at my very distinctive uniform, but decided not to make a big deal of it. "Yes," I said simply.
"I suppose you'd be too busy then, but if you happen to have the time, we're starting just after 6, and I could get you in without an entry fee."
"Survival match?" I asked.
"Ah, haven't you seen one yet? It's a competition. Warriors in an arena lasting as long as possible against summoned monsters. The team that lasts through the most rounds of monsters wins the prize."
"Is that safe?" It didn't sound like it. He chuckled.
"Of course! The summoners can always force their monsters to stop attacking, and we always have menders on the sidelines. I think you'd enjoy it. Your mother was an expert in her day, you know."
I hadn't known that. Honestly, I knew very little about mother's hobbies. "I'd be interested. Let me see if I can make the time. Where is it?" He reached into a pouch, took out a piece of parchment, and wrote me an address.
"It's at the Esselmont Arena, just a few miles from campus."
I took the slip. "Thanks. I hope I can make it. If not, maybe we'll see each other around again sometime."
"I'd certainly hope so. Stay well, young Cadence."
"Good luck tonight." I flashed a polite smile. He cracked his knuckles.
"I won't need it."
Judging by that single attunement, he was probably right. With that minor delay out of the way, I finally made my way into court.
Oi! Corin!
Lars grinned and waved at me as I entered. I looked around, noting a few other customers already browsing. Unusual, given the early hour. Morning, Lars. How's business?
Can't complain. That lad you nearly crashed into bought one of me favorites, so I'm in mourning. Fortunately, I have a new bed of silver to cry into.
I laughed. You have my condolences for your loss. What do you buy?
Quick, Keen! A dagger that can pass through armor like it ain't there. Saved my life more than once it did. Way back in my third year as a climber.
How's it know what qualifies as armor? I interrupted. He folded his arms.
Don't ask me how it works, boy. You are the one with the toy maker's mark, not me.
I made a rude two-finger gesture, and he gave a deep belly laugh. Lars leaned on a nearby countertop.
So, what are you here for today? Going to try to cheat me out of my hard-earned loot, or maybe just my hard-earned money pile?
Well, if you're offering to part with it...
Bah!
He slammed a fist on the counter, then winced and inspected the wood for cracks. Typical. Just here for research, really. Although it might help bring you some business. I stepped over to the closest table, pulling out a blank journal and a fountain pen. I'd bought them both recently out of necessity. The latter was an excellent tool for practicing runes, but much more expensive than traditional quill pens.
Oh? He asked skeptically. And how's that?
I made a wide gesture across the store. Everything here is too expensive for students. If I could sell you some cheap items... Lars shook his head.
Noble idea, lad, but I don't sell cheap items for a reason. My customers know that anything they're going to pick up here is going to help keep them alive in that tower.
He gestured toward the Serpent Spire's location outside. Sure, but even a veteran climber could probably use a few more small trinkets, right?
Maybe, but I'm thinking no. When you wear items too close to each other, they tend to interfere with each other. You can only carry so many before they stop working. Or worse.
I scratched my chin. I'd heard similar things before. What if I could make something useful that you could still sell at a low price?
As a rule, I don't sell anything below carnelian level. Much as I might like you, Corin, you aren't a carnelian yet.
Fair, I'm not. But I can make a few carnelian level items. A few might have been exaggerating, but I'd made one. How hard could it be?
Won't give you a deal without seeing what you're offering. But go ahead, do your research. Can't hurt me to take a look.
I grinned at that. Thanks, Lars. You'll be the first on my list when I get around to making this stuff. Professor Vellum had mentioned selling the items herself, but that didn't mean I couldn't sell some on my own. I snickered to myself and got to work. It turned out that magical items were rushing expensive. I'd known this, of course, but I hadn't really seen the scale or ubiquity of it until I left the court and hit the other three nearby shops I'd known about. Lars liked to brag about how good his deals were, but I never expected those boasts to be true. I liked Lars, but he was the kind of guy who turned chasing a mouse into a story of mythic proportions. As it turned out, he was beating his competitors not only in variety, but also in prices. Even his stuff was nowhere near my price range, though. On the low end, 200 or 300 sigils for a basic carnelian mage class item with a single function. Something sunstone mage level? Several thousand, and they were scarce. Citrine mage enchantments? Tens to hundreds of thousands, and I didn't even find any on display. Not surprising, considering that was enough money to buy a house. A nice house. Anything higher wasn't even listed. In fairness, there were some items that were considerably cheaper, but they were all of the limited use variety, and I fully supported Vellum's view that those were vastly inferior. I'd have considered buying one if it had a life-saving function, like a really powerful healing or teleportation item, but I never saw any of those for sale. So, on the minus side, I wasn't going to be buying any of these items outright anytime soon. On the positive side, I managed to find a few Carnelian-level items up for sale that were similar to the ones Vellum wanted me to work on. And when I checked the material costs, usually about 4 to 5 medium-sized crystals of varying mana types for each of them, I knew I could make them for a fraction of what they were selling for, about a sixth of the sale cost in most cases. That meant that even with Vellum taking half of my net profit, I'd still be making almost triple the material costs. Of course, that was assuming Vellum sold the items for a similar price to Lars, but I thought that was a fairly reasonable approximation. The main problem? I didn't have enough money to get started, and Vellum hadn't been willing to give me a loan. That was when I realized what she'd been trying to get me to think about in the first place. The obvious idea that I'd somehow been missing for weeks. I headed back to Vellum's office almost immediately, finding her still inside. "How do I make my own mana crystals?" The ancient professor cracked a rare grin. "That was faster than I expected." She waved a hand to the chair on the opposite side of her desk. "Let me show you." Vellum extracted herself from her chair, trudging over to one of the shelves on the left side of the office. She groaned and reached for a box on a high shelf. I expedited the process by walking over and pulling it down for her. The box was a simple wooden one, maybe 12 inches across, and closed with a simple latch. I handed it over to her. "Thank you, dear. Now sit back down." I sat. She took the box over to the central table and opened it. Inside were about a half dozen clear crystals. It took me a moment of inspection before I realized they were hollow, but they didn't have any obvious openings.
"I haven't had to look at these in years. Students usually don't bother looking into making their own mana crystals."
I scratched my chin. "What are those? Some sort of mold?" She nodded.
"That's a good way to think of them, but practice mold would be a better way of putting it. They're a tool for learning, but you shouldn't need them once you've mastered the process."
Vellum lifted one from the case.
"These prisms are made of quartz, which is magically inert and capable of containing mana. The simplest way for a student to create a mana crystal is to channel mana of the appropriate type into the hollow interior."
I leaned across the table, taking a closer look. "Wouldn't that just be energy trapped inside a prism rather than making a crystal?"
"Initially, yes. Once you have enough mana to fill the chamber, you must condense the mana into a solid state. This occupies less space than the mana does in solid form. Typically, students find it easiest to focus on pushing the mana into a corner of the crystal, then hardening it."
She paused for a breath.
"It is also possible to simply continue to channel mana into the structure until there is enough to harden it into crystal all at once, but most students find that more challenging."
I tilted my head. "That sounds like shaping, not enchanting."
Vellum sighed. "It's a common misconception that only specific attunements can perform certain basic activities. There's a significant amount of overlap between some similar attunements. You're not a diviner, are you? And yet, you can still see mana while activating your attunement, something that would be typically classified as divination."
She offered me the prism, and I took it, turning it over in my hand. While I inspected the device, Vellum continued speaking.
"Similarly, summoners can call on elemental magic from their bonded monsters, even though they're not elementalists. The more you learn about attunements, the more obvious it becomes that they're just part of a greater whole. When you start seeing attunements from other towers, you'll see even more examples."
I nodded, but the idea of changing the state of mana just seemed so integral to the Shaper attunement that I was having trouble accepting that I could do it myself. "Should I try it here?"
"Goddess, no, boy! I don't have time to watch you embarrass yourself! If you can't figure out in a week, come see me again. If, by some miracle, you manage to fill all these crystals, you can bring them all back here and I'll show you how to extract the mana. Do not break my practice prisms trying to get the mana out."
I set the prism back inside the container. She shut the lid and pushed it over to me. I accepted the box, pondering aloud. If enchanters can make our own mana crystals, why isn't every enchanter in the school doing it? It's difficult, and not particularly rewarding. The first crystals you're going to make are going to be weaker than the smallest type found in the tower. Stronger crystals have a higher density, that is, more mana in a crystal of the same size. You can't just keep adding more mana to a crystal you've already made, however. Once it's solid, it's solid. You can't force more mana into it. I nodded, following the logic. So, I need to be able to pack as much mana as possible into a small space, then solidify it after that. Precisely. And because you need to do it in a single session, it's not possible to make a crystal with a greater value than whatever portion of your mana capacity you're capable of expending all at once, which, at your level of skill, isn't much. Okay, that makes sense, but it's essentially a way of making free money. I assume it's easier for more advanced enchanters than it would be for me. Why aren't they making dozens of crystals and flooding the market? There's no point. If you're a citrine-level enchanter or higher, you probably don't need the kind of crystals you can make yourself. Most crystals are relatively cheap, because most non-enchanters have no use for them, and practically every monster in the tower is a crystal at their core. Magical items, however, are quite expensive. For a veteran enchanter, it's vastly more efficient to buy crystals for a pittance and then make and sell fully assembled items for 10 or more times the cost of the materials. That made sense, but I still figured it would be a useful skill to be able to make the components I needed to enchant something. There was a key flaw. I'd only be able to make crystals for the mana types I could generate in my own body. But that still meant I could make the crystals necessary for some basic devices, like more shield sigils. I could live with that. I did have one more question, though. You said these are for practice. What's the next step? Focusing your mana in the air, forming a solid crystal without a shell. It's vastly more difficult, since mana quickly dissipates when exposed to air unless you force it not to. Vellum steepled her fingers. You can either learn to make and solidify crystals so rapidly that there's minimal mana loss, or you can learn to create a solid shell out of mana. The latter effectively mimics the current function of the prism, and then form the rest of the crystal inside the shell. Both approaches made sense to me conceptually, but the latter definitely sounded easier. Okay, how long do you expect me to take to learn to be able to do that? The professor chortled. You probably never will. Once you're over your little financial hurdle, you'll probably stop bothering with this process entirely. Almost everyone does. That sounded like a challenge. But if I wanted to, how long would you expect it to take? She shrugged a shoulder. Hundreds of practice attempts? Most likely several months to a year. I resolved to figure it out by the end of the week. I sat in my room, focusing on channeling mana from my right hand into the empty space inside one of the crystals. It was a familiar enough process, similar to powering a rune, but I wasn't used to trying to push mana through something. The crystal wasn't very porous, which I'm sure was part of the point. The structure made it harder for mana to escape, but it also made it tricky for me to get mana through the crystal and into the empty space within. It took a few minutes before I was confident I was managing to get any mana into the prism at all, and even then, it was slow. Excruciatingly slow. Several times, I wondered if I was doing something fundamentally wrong. Was I supposed to be able to just manifest my mana directly inside the crystal without forcing it through the prism first? Probably not. That was probably what made the process different from what a shaper could accomplish. I could shove mana out through my hand, but I needed to stay in contact with the energy to do anything with it. A shaper could sense and restructure mana remotely, which was how they could make things like phantasmal swords that floated in the air, or, at more advanced levels, things like simulacra. I felt a pang of disappointment that I'd ended up with an enchanter attunement rather than something as obviously useful as the shaper one would have been. But a shaper couldn't make permanent items, and I was enjoying that too much to feel too bad about it. If the goddess really had played a role in giving me my attunement, she'd probably been closer to right than I'd given her credit for. and there was nothing saying I couldn't get a second attunement later on. The trials in the tower would be much more difficult, but I was confident I could face them eventually. After an hour of practice, I had a pounding headache. I may have panicked a little bit when I realized that. I hadn't been trying to use my mental mana. My hand was throbbing from the mana I'd siphoned out of it, but I'd expected that, and I was fairly used to it. I wasn't just pouring raw mana into something this time, though. I was actively concentrating on detecting the structure of that mana, both to get it inside the crystal and so that I could eventually try to condense it into a solid. That meant I was using my mental mana to monitor my progress without even realizing it, and I'd used more of it than I'd ever knowingly used before. I stopped immediately, barely having the presence of mind to lower the crystal back into the box. With my focus gone, the mana would dissipate, but I didn't care. I just sat there shaking, agonizing over the possibility that I'd caused myself permanent mental damage through some stupid practice exercise. Deep breaths. It took me a good 10 minutes to calm myself down. I reminded myself of the lectures, how I'd get headaches long before I suffered permanent damage, that I'd notice if I was causing myself cognitive harm, but they weren't particularly reassuring. No amount of reassurance could completely neutralize an irrational fear. I ran fingers through my hair, massaging my own temples. I might have made the headache worse by fixating on it, but I couldn't not think about it. After another few minutes, I managed to get my head together sufficiently to realize I needed a distraction. I chewed on an Eros fruit while I headed to Sarah's dorm. I didn't know if she'd be around, but just having a goal helped me defocus somewhat. Fortunately, she answered the door when I arrived. I didn't know what I would have done if she'd been gone. "Corin?" She narrowed her eyes at me. "Are you okay? You look... off." "Headache," I offered, as if that explained everything. "Do you remember Derek Hartigan, one of Tristan's friends?" She folded her arms. "I don't think so. I was never as close to Tristan as you were." There was a hint of something sharp in her tone. Was it resentment? I couldn't tell. I just nodded along, not wanting to stir up any more negative feelings she might have had. "I didn't remember him either, but I guess he remembered me. And I've heard of the Hartigan family. I think I've read a book by one of them. Anyway, he's apparently fighting in something called a survival match tonight. He said my mother used to compete in them." Sarah shifted her footing, giving me a quizzical look. "Yeah, she used to love those when she was younger. You didn't know that?" I felt a momentary pang of shame. Or maybe that was just the headache again. Probably shame. I'd been close with my mother once. Before Tristan's disappearance, we used to sit and read together. Sometimes she'd tell me stories about our family history. She seemed equally familiar with the genealogy of both sides and the legacy I'd need to live up to. At the time, I'd been proud to be descended from war heroes and famous politicians. She'd scarcely said 2 words to me since she'd left. Not that I'd put in the effort either, though. That letter I'd written her about Karis was the only communication I'd sent her in the last couple years. I wrote her more often right after she'd left, but I gave up after a while. I told myself that it wasn't my responsibility, that she was the adult, and that she was supposed to be the one taking care of me. I was starting to realize the situation was more complex than that, but I still didn't have the will to do anything about it. Not yet. Getting Tristan back would be the first step toward repairing my family. I shook my head, dismissing errant thoughts. She might have mentioned it. Anyway, he invited me to watch, and I figured I'd see if you wanted to come along.
How uncharacteristically social of you. I should wear my best, since this is clearly a special occasion.
I'm pretty sure our school uniforms are the most formal things we have here.
I said best, Corin, not most formal.
Sarah gave me the kind of smirk that said she was plotting something. I couldn't imagine how she hoped to embarrass me with what she was going to wear, but I was sure she'd manage it if I didn't put a stop to this now. I held my hands up in surrender.
Normal clothes would be just fine.
Sarah raised a hand to her lips, eyes turning upward in thought.
I suppose, but what if...
Normal, Sarah. We're going to look perfectly normal.
She sighed, folding her hands in front of her. Fine, fine. You always spoil my fun. I suppose I'll come and keep you company, since you're clearly ailing right now and need my support. I nodded, sincerely grateful. Let's go find this place.
Sarah insisted on arriving significantly early, but we managed to get lost long enough that we only arrived slightly early. Esselmont Arena didn't look like what I expected. It wasn't an ancient-style coliseum or sports arena. Instead, it looked a bit more like a vast opera house with expensive decor and expansive interior. At the ticket sales counter, I mentioned we were there to see one of the combatants. They sent someone to inform Derek, and he arrived a few minutes later.
Corrin, you made it! And who is this lovely lass? Your lady love, perchance?
He gave me a knowing look. I returned one of existential horror.
No, she's family. Anyway, I know you mentioned you could get me in, but you didn't say anything about two people. Sorry. I can buy us tickets. I just wanted to let you know I'm here.
He waved a hand dismissively.
Nonsense! Your family is always welcome! I'm sure I can get you both into an excellent box, but I might have a better offer.
What sort of better offer?
Sarah asked.
Derek glanced at her, then back at me.
How would you like to try fighting in there?
I blinked. I've never even seen one of these matches. I have no idea what it entails.
It's not that bad, Corrin.
Sarah nudged me.
You should do it. Assuming he'd get a cut of any winnings?
Of course, of course.
Derek looked me up and down.
You already look well equipped. You'd be doing me a tremendous favor. My partner dropped out at the last minute, you see, and I'm desperate for someone to fill his slot. I can handle the fighting on my own, for the most part, but I'm signed up for pairs, and they won't let me in without a partner.
Ah, now that explained a great deal.
I'm still not sure I'd be the best person to bring in there, although I truly appreciate the offer. My attunement isn't really made for direct combat, but
I'll do it,
Sarah interjected. She turned around, pulling up her shirt to reveal her summoner attunement mark on her back. That wasn't strictly a scandalous action. She wasn't showing much skin, but I was a little surprised and embarrassed to see it, not because of the location, but because I'd assumed that her attunement was on her right hand, underneath the glove she always wore. In retrospect, the fact that she always used incantations for her spells was a pretty big indication that her attunement mark was over her lungs. That was characteristic of their style.
Well, well, you're a summoner, Miss Cadence? I think that would compliment me quite well. In the arena, of course. I don't think we've been properly introduced yet. Derek Hardigan.
He extended a hand. She slipped her glove back into place and reached to shake his hand. He bowed and kissed it instead. Seriously? I rolled my eyes. I couldn't help myself. For some people, kissing someone's hand might have been an old-fashioned greeting, but this guy just came across as theatrical. Sarah grinned brightly, showing her teeth.
Well, well, a gentleman. You could teach my brother a thing or two.
She glanced at me, then back to him.
I'm Sarah. Sarah Cadence. Charmed to meet you.
I folded my arms at her own theatrics. She winked at me. She was enjoying this. With introductions complete, Derek spoke to the gentleman at the ticket counter and then escorted us inside. The clientele were generally well-dressed, top hats, canes, and a few ladies and gentlemen in more obscure fashion. I even noted a few wearing eye masks similar to the one Karis had worn. That brought him back into my mind. Had he survived that confrontation with Katashi? Mother's letter seemed to indicate that he had. I had mixed feelings about that, since I had a pretty poor opinion of the visages, but I knew they generally seemed to work for humanity's benefit. There was a good chance that Karis was truly a dangerous criminal, especially if he served the tyrant in gold. I'd grown up with stories about how the tyrant had conquered continent after continent, enslaving millions for his empire. I didn't know how much of that was true, though, and Karis's heretical claims about the tyrant seemed to be at the core of what had started this whole mess.
I'd need to do some research on the Tyrant's children eventually, but it wasn't a high priority at the moment. In the meantime, I found myself sitting in a plush chair in a high box over what looked like a vast stage. There were dozens of boxes like our own, as well as multiple levels of general seating in more traditional bleachers. Near the stage itself, I also spied an orchestra pit with a full orchestra setting up their instruments. Maybe this was an opera house. It was set up very similarly to an opera or theater, with the key exception that the main floor area was significantly larger than any opera stage I'd seen, and there wasn't any seating down at the stage level. All the seats were overlooking the area where the battle would be taking place. After a minute or so of searching, I was able to pick out the runes at the edge of the stage that marked the boundaries of a barrier field. It was very subtle. The soft glow of the runes blended in with the ambient light cast by lanterns hanging nearby. This is actually a lot like the way the council room was set up, but this actually looks safer for observers. Maybe the city council should get rid of whoever designed their building and hire a theater architect. There was only room for two seats in our particular box, so Sarah sat while Derek stood and pointed down into the theater area.
That's where Sarah and I will be fighting once it's time to begin. I had a few other options, but I feel privileged to have found you, Miss Cadence. I've worked with a summoner before, but never one as striking as yourself.
From the way Sarah's lips tightened, I could tell she was already starting to regret this. To Derek's credit, most people our age probably would have appreciated his compliments. Sarah, unfortunately, was more like me than I was usually willing to admit. Since she had gotten herself into this to make me feel better, I felt a little obligation to ease her suffering. I turned to Derek. What does she need to know about this? What sort of monsters will she be facing in there? Derek leaned back against the balcony, looking precariously close to falling onto the stage.
Typical tower stuff, mostly from the first few floors. I suppose you two haven't done much of that yet, have you? No matter. You'll get a chance to watch a couple rounds before we get in there. The important thing to know is the general structure.
He raised a single hand, and then put a finger from his other hand in between his thumb and his pointer finger.
The stage will be sectioned off before we start. We'll be in a section here. My other fingers represent walls. There will be monsters in each section.
Derek lowered his pointer finger.
As soon as the match starts, they'll lower the first wall, and we'll have to fight the first set of monsters. After about a minute,
he lowered his middle finger.
They'll lower the next wall, and another set will attack, regardless of whether or not we've dealt with the first set. This happens until the whole stage is revealed.
He closed his hand.
Then,
he raised two fingers again.
The last monster will be much stronger than the rest. If we survive that, we'll move to the opposite side of the stage and the walls will reset. We get a brief reprieve while summoners call down more monsters in between each of the wall segments. Once they're done, the process starts over. Stronger monsters each time.
Sarah nodded. How long do people typically last?
People? Most teams tend to get stopped by the large monster at the end of the first set. Me? My partner and I usually clear two full sets, at which point the summoners are typically out of mana and will win for the evening by default.
I really wanted to ask how much of that was due to his partner. I couldn't think of a political way to phrase it, though. Sarah solved that problem. How far do you expect us to make it? Derek's eyes narrowed, and he folded his hands in front of him, looking at Sarah with a serious expression.
I wouldn't risk asking a first-year student to come in here with me if I didn't think I could take care of this. If for any reason it looks like I'm going to let a monster through that could hurt you, though, step out of the ring. You'll be out of the fight after that, but you can avoid being hurt that way.
I frowned. How do these things usually end, aside from exhausting the summoners or the contestants leaving the ring?
Oh, usually the matches end when the contestants are too badly injured to stand.
Derek chuckled.
But you've got me here. What are the chances of that?
After that little statement, I took off my shield sigil and demigauntlet and handed them to Sarah. She blinked. Can I even wear these? I nodded. The shield sigils are weak enough that two probably won't interfere with each other. But wear them on opposite sides of your tunic just in case.
If you had five, they probably wouldn't work. As for the gauntlet, the glove will be big on you, so it might be uncomfortable, but it should function. Derek furrowed his brow.
What does that glove do? I don't believe I've ever seen anything quite like it.
Sarah slipped her normal glove off, and I helped her put the gauntlet on in its place. It's basically a dueling cane in glove form. Stronger than a typical practice cane, weaker than a full war cane.
Interesting. Magical items are legal down there. I have several myself. But I can't say I've seen a glove with an offensive design. Should be quite interesting. Hopefully the crowd will like it.
I wasn't sure why that was relevant, but I realized Derek probably was here for more than coin. Do more popular combatants get paid better or some such? Derek smiled.
Ah, an excellent question. Better fighters win both glory and more rewards. Each survival match is a self-contained event, with specific prizes for the winner and much smaller prizes for everyone else. Winning matches consistently and in entertaining ways has the potential to earn sponsors for additional sources of income. Finally, excellent fighters can earn their way into championship matches.
Sarah nodded along with his explanation. And I take it you're looking for sponsorship?
Oh, no, I don't need that. I'm much more interested in an invitation to this year's championships. They often have crowds of thousands, and the summoned monsters are often spectacular.
In it for the glory, then. I sincerely hoped that attitude wouldn't put Sarah at risk. It would make him look bad if Sarah was hurt down there, wouldn't it? I certainly hoped so. My left hand settled on the hilt of the saber at my side. Even if Sarah was carrying most of my equipment, I wouldn't hesitate to intervene if it looked like she was in serious danger. I hoped that it wouldn't have to come to that.
It's time. A well-dressed man appeared behind the box, bowing toward Derek. Ah, thank you, Thomas. Ms. Cadence, we'll need to head below to prepare, shall we?
He offered Sarah his arm. Sarah flashed him another grin and accepted.
Don't get killed down there, Sarah snickered.
Don't get killed up here either.
I will endeavor not to, but no promises.
My grip tightened around the hilt of my sword as the pair disappeared. Given what I'd seen of Derek's attitude thus far, I was barely even surprised when he and Sarah appeared on stage as the first contestants of the evening. I'd been given a program booklet by one of the attendants, and he was scheduled to be going toward the middle of the night. He was listed along with a partner named Elora Theus. Had the organizers decided to move him and Sarah up to an earlier part of the show, or had he deliberately manipulated this turn of events for some reason? I couldn't be sure, but I was leaning toward the latter. Perhaps even more interesting was his partner's name, Elora Theus. Was she the counselor, Theus, that had been working with my mother? That woman had been roughly Derek's age.
"Ladies and gentlemen!"
the voice seemed to emit from all around me. No announcer was visible.
"Tonight, we present three-time champion Derek Hartigan alongside a new partner, Sarah of the legendary House Cadence!"
Polite but subdued clapping from the crowd. The only cheering came from the bleachers section, which seemed to be mostly populated by other students. The well-dressed nobles in the boxes were much more restrained with their applause. A light emanated from a rune-etched tile above the theater, marking a line that divided off a small section of the stage.
"Contestants, proceed to your starting area for the raising of the walls!"
Sarah looked vastly less nervous than I felt. If anything, she just looked intense, her eyes focused straight ahead and her jaw clenched tight. Derek looked joyous. He twirled on his heels, raising his hand to wave and occasionally blowing a few kisses into the crowd. When they reached the marked-off section of the stage, a voice boomed again.
"Contestants, ready yourselves! The summoning is about to begin!"
Sarah glanced back and forth, showing a hint of nervousness for the first time. Derek just stood with his back straight, his head held high.
"Walls, ascend!"
As the announcer spoke, four walls of solid mana appeared at equal intervals across the stage. I couldn't see the casters, but I could recognize shaper work. Walls of that size and thickness were fairly impressive. No student my age could manage anything on that scale. It would have been trivial for my father, but most magic tended to be. The important part was that the walls were opaque, meaning Sarah and Derek wouldn't be able to see anything behind them. From my vantage point above, though, I could see each individual section in advance. It was hard to tell from a distance, but I estimated each section to be about 15 feet across, meaning a fast monster could close the distance between sections within a couple seconds. The effect? Tension, for both the people inside the arena and the watchers. I drew in a sharp breath as the monsters began to appear and the musicians began to play.
Contestants, begin!
The first wall lifted, and a dozen clawed monstrosities rushed the defending pair. The creatures were humanoid, roughly 4 feet tall, with reddish-brown hide. I'd never seen anything like them. Sarah stepped backward and raised her hand, firing a blast from the gauntlet into the onrushing crowd. The manosphere tore straight through one of the creatures, downing it instantly and burned the arm off of another. My eyes narrowed. I'd built that thing. I knew it wasn't that powerful. Was it more effective because these creatures were summoned figments of monsters rather than real ones? I'd never fought a figment. I didn't know how resilient they were. Regardless of that early success, the other 11 were nearly on top of them by the time Sarah recovered to fire a second blast. Derek stepped in front of her, drawing his sword and swinging it in the same motion. A wave of flame swept out from the blade, incinerating 4 more of the creatures. He spun left, physically slashing one of the onrushing creatures in half, then unleashed a vertical shockwave of flame with an upward cut. The wave of fire tore another of the creatures asunder, while Sarah fired another 2 blasts, eliminating 2 more threats. The remaining creatures pulled back, looking wary. Derek rushed forward with an expression of manic glee on his face, cutting the last few creatures apart in moments. I joined in the ensuing clapping, but my mind was whirring in several directions. This seemed too easy, but then again, Derek had seemed very confident. I noticed Sarah rubbing her right hand with her left. She wasn't used to using the gauntlet, but she'd been practicing with a dueling cane for years. I assumed she had a significant amount of mana to work with. I'd never asked. I hoped I hadn't given her a tool that could potentially harm her.
Stay back here and support me from range!
Derek's voice was being amplified somehow. I could hear it clearly from my location in the box. One of the parts of the spectacle, I presumed.
No problem, Sarah replied.
The next wall vanished, revealing a group of green and blue slimes. Sarah whispered something.
Interesting. She must have been so quiet that the sound-amplifying spells didn't pick it up.
4 spheres of ice appeared around Sarah, rotating in orbit. A defensive spell? I haven't seen that one before. Derek pressed forward, swinging his weapon with reckless abandon. The slimes never managed to get close. His blade tore them apart like paper. I noted a long vein of crimson running through the center of the blade, meaning that the flames I'd seen before probably came from the weapon itself, not one of Derek's attunement abilities. Or perhaps some combination of both, like how I'd learned to manipulate the aura of my own sword. What is his attunement anyway? Derek was moving fast, but not the kind of faster-than-sight movement I'd seen from Karras. And it was consistent speed, not short bursts like I'd seen from Marissa. I glanced ahead at the next few walls. 2 Bargenzi would be next, followed by a single huge humanoid carrying a club. An ogre. My hands shook as I processed what I was seeing. Ogres were hideously strong and dangerous enough that entire groups of experienced climbers would often avoid confronting them directly. The next wall vanished, revealing the 2 Bargenzi. I balled my hands into fists as Derek advanced, dispatching the first one with a single slash to the head. The other rushed past him.
Ice, answer my command and form a wall!
A glacial barrier stretched across the stage at Sarah's command, blocking the Bargenzi's path. As it spun around, Derek leapt atop it, driving his burning blade into its back. The creature slumped to the ground, twitching for a moment before it vanished. As he rose, the last wall flickered behind him, and the ogre loomed behind him, ready to strike. "Look out!" Sarah yelled. The ogre's club descended with bone-shattering force. Twin blades flashed upward to catch the strike. Derek, without even looking behind him, had parried the blow. The swordsman spun on a heel, slashing with both weapons and lacerating the ogre's front leg. The titanic creature roared into the air, slamming its club into the arena floor with a reverberating crack. Derek hopped back, glancing at Sarah.
"Think you could slow the big guy down for me a bit?"
Sarah cracked her knuckles.
"I have just the thing."
She waved a single hand at the creature.
"Bind!"
A swirling matrix of symbols manifested around the ogre, wrapping around it and vanishing as the runes touched its skin. It howled in response, charging forward with no sign of being slowed. Sarah raised a hand above her head.
"Frost, I invoke you to block his path."
A waist-height barrier of ice appeared between the ogre and its prey. It crashed into the barrier heedlessly and tripped, falling on its face. The frost showed no sign of damage.
"Not bad."
Derek walked over as the ogre began to pick itself up.
"Never seen an ice barrier that could stop an ogre before."
Derek jabbed one of his two weapons toward the ogre's fallen form, and the ogre raised a hand, catching Derek's blade between two fingers.
"Stupid humans," the ogre muttered. "Always try the same tricks."
Using two fingers, it pulled. With its other hand, it slammed a fist right into Derek's chest. The swordsman flew backward, slamming into the first ice wall that Sarah had made. He dropped his second sword on impact, and the ogre was still holding onto the first.
"Oh, goddess, that's bad. At least Sarah's safe on the other side of the wall."
Sarah snapped her fingers. The wall of ice separating the pair disappeared.
"Oh, come on, Sarah,"
I mumbled. As Derek put a hand on the floor in a weak attempt to push himself from the floor, the ogre rose, looking barely injured from Derek's earlier strikes. The ogre flicked its hand, and Derek's captured sword flew straight toward his chest. Derek rolled to the side, snatching his other fallen blade as he evaded the throw. Derek looked as if he was going to stand, but fell back to his knees, coughing as the ogre retrieved its club and advanced. Sarah grimaced, raising both hands.
"Child of the goddess, I call upon your aid. Rain frost from the skies in a permafrost cascade!"
Shards of ice materialized in the air above Sarah, flashing through the air and piercing into the ogre's flesh. It howled as the projectiles continued to bombard it, raising a hand to shield its eyes and charging at Sarah, club poised to strike. Derek slashed the ogre's ankle as it ran past him. It didn't slow down. Sarah remained still, looking oblivious to the danger as the ogre neared striking range. Her summoned shards of ice continued to bombard the monster, but they were insufficient to strike a killing blow. The ogre raised its club. Sarah's right hand shot down. Slip! A patch of frost appeared in the ogre's path. The ogre hit the ice and began to slide forward, but it didn't fall. Within a moment, it had corrected its balance. Sarah's eyes widened as the club swept toward her, too thick for her to dodge, too heavy for her to hope to parry. A blade pierced through the center of the ogre's back, and the creature began to vanish, the club losing corporeality as its phantasmal remains whisked harmlessly through Sarah's body.
"Thanks for giving that back to me,"
Derek remarked to the disappearing creature. A trace of blood was visible at the side of his mouth. Sarah shivered.
"Contestants, you have cleared the first round."
Clapping from the audience. I felt only horror.
"Please move to the other side of the stage."
Derek moved to retrieve his sword from where it had fallen after impaling the ogre, then seized Sarah by the hand.
"Come on, only one round down. You're not done yet, are you?"
Sarah shook her head.
"No, of course not."
She gave a false smile, the kind I'd offered 1,000 times. I felt the urge to intervene, but I didn't know how. Could I break through the barrier outside the ring from the outside and get on the stage to help them? A single glance at the warding runes showed me how implausible that would be. I recognized dozens of individual shielding glyphs, each several times stronger than my sigil. By the time I'd done that, the pair was on the other side of the stage, and four new barriers rose to mark the stage into sections. Derek was clutching his chest where the ogre had punched him.
30 seconds until the next round begins.
Sarah gave Derek a look up and down. How badly are you hurt? Derek chuckled, and I thought I heard a wheeze in the laugh.
Oh, this is nothing. I've had far worse.
His several seconds of coughing made his words rather unconvincing. Sarah folded her arms.
Right. I'm sure you die in here on a regular basis. Can you heal yourself?
He sighed, rolling his eyes.
Well, if you want to ruin the surprise...
His right hand shot forward, extending his blade toward the wall in front of him.
Tavare, awaken!
Golden light spread across his mirror-bright blade. I thought I heard the sound of a chime emitting from the steel, like a bell ringing out the song. He released his grip on the blade, and it floated, still in the air. Golden light flowed out from the hilt, forming a mist that began to harden into a solid shape. My eyes widened as I took in the sight of the creature that it formed. It looked perfectly human, but too perfect to be human itself. Its skin was the same golden color as the aura that it had emerged from. Aside from its face, however, its body was enshrouded in scale-like armor, armor that I realized seemed to grow directly out of its skin. It was only distinct from its flesh in its obvious thickness and having a stronger metallic sheen.
Radiance has awakened to serve.
The creature took to a knee, laying the sword across it. Derek sighed, his now free hand across his forehead.
Thank you, Tavare. You...
The first wall fell, revealing a swarm of bee-like insects the size of dogs. Sarah took a step back, raising her hands. Derek pointed at the bees as they shot forward.
Handle those, then come heal me.
Radiance obeys.
Tavare glanced at the flying insects. Without standing, it lashed out with its sword hand, making several cuts too rapidly for me to follow. Scintillating flashes accompanied each motion. The insects fell to pieces, vanishing as they struck the floor. I blinked. I'd seen no attacks emitted from the blade. Presumably, its attack was similar to the one Derek had used to create the crescents of flame, but I'd seen nothing analogous appear. This creature was either using attacks that were invisible to me, or that were simply too fast for me to perceive. Possibly both.
Useless creatures.
Tavare stood, shaking its head. It stepped close to Derek, putting a hand upon his chest.
You have sustained structural damage. Expect pain.
Derek nodded and balled his right hand into a fist.
Go ahead.
Golden light flowed from the creature's hand across his torso. He shivered, clenching and unclenching his hand. As the light faded, he lowered his head, taking a deep breath. The next wall disappeared. A single monstrous spider appeared, advancing on the group. Tavare turned, hurling her golden blade straight into the center of its head. The spider died instantly. Tavare made a compelling gesture with its hand, and the sword floated back into its grip. Seemingly unbothered, it returned to healing Derek. Sarah took a step back, moving closer to the edge of the stage. I didn't fault her for the caution. I had basically zero idea what they were dealing with. I'd been reading up about enchanting for quite a while, including about intelligent weapons, since my own sword seemed to be at least empathic. I had never heard about a sword that could manifest a person. Was Tavare some sort of summoned monster? I'd never heard of a monster that could take the form of a weapon, but I supposed it was possible. Considering Sarah's expression, though, I didn't think she knew what it was either, and she was a summoner herself. The next wall disappeared, revealing a half dozen winged spiders. Winged spiders. Seeing those, I briefly had second thoughts about ever visiting the tower again. Derek seemed less concerned, stretching out his arms and passing his remaining sword into his right hand.
I'll take care of this set, Tavare. Can you offer some mana to my friend Sarah?
Tavare turned its gaze to Sarah.
Radiance has little to spare, but it will serve.
Sarah took another step back, nearly exiting the bounds of the stage. Tavare was in front of her in an instant.
Extend your hand, friend called Sarah.
Sarah hesitantly extended her right hand, and Tavare clasped its left hand around it. Derek jumped forward, hacking apart one of the spiders with a flaming cut, and then surged into the midst of the others. Since he seemed to be having no difficulty, I focused on what was going on with Sarah. Tavare leaned in closer, staring into Sarah's eyes.
A binder of beasts. I am honored.
It can recognize her attunement? Interesting. It must have some kind of detection magic. Wait, did he tell Tavare to give Sarah mana? Isn't that supposed to be hideously dangerous? I frowned. I was certain I'd heard that transferring mana to other people was a problem, because our bodies rejected foreign mana. Maybe that only applied to humans giving mana to other humans. If monsters could safely transfer mana to humans, there had to be a way to use that knowledge. But I'd think about that later. For the moment, Sarah had pulled away from the strange sword creature, and she had folded her hands in front of her.
Thank you. I am honored by your aid.
You are welcome, friend called Sarah. I must rest now.
And with that, Tavare vanished, and the sword unceremoniously clattered to the floor. Sarah frowned, knelt down, and gingerly picked up the weapon. The final barrier fell. I had been too busy watching Sarah's exchange with Tavare to see the threat that awaited her. A winged humanoid with perfectly sculpted muscles of stone. A Carvensi. I shivered. I hadn't seen one since they'd appeared amongst the gargoyles, driving the students into shelters, but I knew very well how powerful they were. This one was no mere insect from the lower floors of the tower. Sarah stood tall, pointing the gauntlet at the creature, and fired a burst of mana. It glanced harmlessly across the creature's skin. The Carvensi grinned. Magic resistant and as intelligent as a human, I remembered. Derek lashed out in the air with his crimson blade, sending a flaming shockwave in the monster's direction. It raised a hand, and a wall of ice, near identical to the one Sarah had used, rose and stopped the blast. Oh, and the strongest ones can cast spells. I grimaced and wished that incredibly dangerous sword creature was still around. The Carvensi flapped its wings, taking off into the air and settling atop the wall of ice.
Oh, hello, little ones. This is one of your little sports, yes? How am I doing?
It raised a clawed finger and scratched at its chin.
The objective is to kill you, correct?
Derek took a few steps back, closer to Sarah.
I suppose from your perspective...
Excellent. I haven't had permission to do that in years. So if you'd be kind enough to burn...
It stretched its hands out in a T-shape.
I'd be much obliged.
A red glow manifested across the entire stage. Derek jumped, impossibly high, swinging his sword in a horizontal sweep, but the Carvensi simply took off, floating out of reach. Sarah pointed downward as she jumped.
Freeze!
An icy platform manifested below her, just as jets of flame flashed upward from the stage. A barrier flashed around Derek, but it was a weak one. It cracked almost instantly on impact, and when the flames died down, they left pools of molten lava across the stage floor. Sarah reached out before Derek could complete his fall. A whip of ice lashed out from her hand, wrapping around his torso, and she pulled, jerking him onto the platform where she stood. He smashed into her hard, knocking her down and nearly off the ice, but she stopped her slide inches from the magma edge.
Thanks.
Derek knelt and pulled Sarah away from the burning floor. A blast of mana slammed into his back an instant later, knocking him flat. His face smashed into the ice.
Don't forget about me, children.
The Carvensi flapped above, clapping his hands together.
Ice? Fire? What's next? Remind me. Ah, correct. Lightning!
A dark cloud spread across the top of the stage. I stared incredulously.
Sarah grimaced, waving a hand upward. Shell! A glacial dome formed above Derek and Sarah mere instants before the first flash of electricity arced downward from the cloud. Chunks of frost burst free at the impact, but the dome held. The dome was opaque. For a moment, I could see nothing of my sister's fate.